My topic tonight is going to be human suffering, an argument for God. This is kind of a weird topic in a lot of ways, I think, but this is something that I think we as Christians need to be aware of, this line of reasoning, this line of thought. There was a few years ago when I was in Portland that I was privileged enough to go to a debate between some Church of Christ ministers, some evolutionists, and agnostics. And one of the questions posed to the members of the church was this question. The evolutionists, they wanted to know, if God is all-loving and God's all-powerful, then why does He allow things like World War II to happen? Why does He have tornadoes and hurricanes and all these horrible things? Why are these things allowed to happen? This is a real question that evolutionists, atheists, will challenge you on. And I think if you want to be prepared, you have to study. You have to come to an understanding as, why is there suffering in this world? Why has God allowed these things to happen? Their thought process goes something like this. There may be no God at all. There may be a God who is all good. There may be a God who is all powerful. But there cannot be a God who is all good and all powerful. They reason that if there was a God who was all good and all powerful and all loving, He would intervene. So the question is tonight we want to look at is, do they have a valid argument? Do they have a valid challenge to the existence of God? If you get on the internet and you type in this question, why do bad things happen to good people? You're going to have a bunch of hits come up. I typed that in last night sitting at home. One of the ones that came up was just something that happened very recently. There was a question on there, was why does God allow things like Katrina to happen if He is good and loving? But one of the most frequent hits you're going to get is going to come from a man, or regarding a man named Rabbi Harold Kushner. Rabbi Harold Kushner is a very well-known Jewish rabbi, and in the 60s, he had a son who was diagnosed with a horrible disease called progeria. This is a disease of rapid aging. He struggled with this. He thought, I've dedicated my life to God. How is it that God is going to take my son away from me? He struggled with this, and he ended up writing a book based off of his hardships, based off of his struggles. His son died in his early teens, which is a horrible tragedy. But I would bet that many of you in this room have lost children when they were very young. And this is a horrible tragedy, and nobody here is going to make light of that. But we do have to ask ourselves, if God is all-powerful, if God is all-loving, why do these things happen? Why does God allow these things to happen? Rabbi Harold Kushner came to this conclusion. There is a God. He is all-loving, but unfortunately, He's just not all-powerful. In fact, this is a direct quote. There are some things God cannot control. There are some things God cannot control. Let me ask you this question before we proceed any further tonight. Do you want to worship a God who cannot control good and evil? Do you want to worship a God who is too weak to impact His will on the very world which He created? Does that even make sense? That He could create something but not impact His will upon it? This is what Rabbi Harold Kushner is selling, and many people are buying it. How does this compare with the Bible? Well, first of all, these teachings contradict biblical truths. We're not going to turn these passages because of time, but if you're jotting anything down, jot down this. 1 John chapter 3, verse 20 demonstrates that God is all-knowing. 1 John chapter 4, verse 8 demonstrates that God is all-loving. And Jeremiah chapter 32, verse 17 and verse 27 demonstrate that God is all-powerful. In the second verse I mentioned, Jeremiah 32, 27, God says, is there anything too great for me? Is there anything too difficult for me to do? Obviously, that question is that He's already answering it, isn't He? Absolutely not. So the Rabbi Harold Kushner is in disagreement with what biblical texts, biblical truths reveal to us. This is a very difficult question, though. How many of you, if I were to ask you, how many of you have had similar struggles? Those of you who I referred to who've lost children. How many of you asked God that? God, why me? Why was my child taken from me? God, why am I suffering through this horrible disease? God, why me? Why are these things happening to me? This is a very real question. It's a very hard question to answer sometimes. But it's not a question that you are unique in asking. In fact, I would bet that anybody who has lived many years in this room has asked that very question. Why is this happening to me, God? I don't understand it. Well, the Bible itself raises similar questions. Notice this passage from Jeremiah chapter 12. you want to turn there, you can. I will put most of the verses up on the screen, however. All of my references are going to come from the English Standard Version. Jeremiah asked this question. He said, "Righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you, yet I would plead my case before you. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? How long," verse 4, "how long will the land mourn and the grass of every field wither? For the evil of those who dwell in it, the beasts and the birds are swept away, because they said, he will not see our latter end," or he's not going to see what happens to us anyway. Jeremiah asked the question, he says, how long are these people who are wicked going to prosper? When are you going to punish them, God? Habakkuk asked a very similar question, a very similar struggle that he was going through. The nation of Judah, which he loved very much, was a nation of sin. The nation of God's people had abandoned God. They were living in horrible abandonment of God. And Habakkuk, a righteous man, was moved with this. He was furious with this. He was hurt by this, and he wanted God to intervene. But God wasn't. That's what Habakkuk thought anyways. And look at his question. O Lord, how long will I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me, strife and contentions arise. So the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth, for the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. Are those hard questions he's asking God? Look at the ones I have underlined here. How long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Have you ever felt that way? That you're crying to God and he's simply not listening to you? If you are, you're not alone. Habakkuk asked the same question. Look at another passage. I had it on that first screen. Psalms chapter 13. Notice this passage beginning in verse 1. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? These are questions that I think we've all asked. God, how long are these things going to keep on happening? How long is the wicked person going to keep prospering? How long are the righteous going to struggle? Why is there evil and suffering in the world? These are very legitimate questions. I want to pose to you tonight a couple of hopefully solutions that will hopefully be beneficial to you. I find them beneficial, I find them encouraging, and I believe that they are true. And hopefully you will agree with me on that. First of all, evil and suffering occur because God allowed us to choose. God put in each one of us the freedom of choice. And as such, we have a right or an ability to choose to obey God or to choose to ignore God. In Genesis chapter 2, I know you're already reading this one, I shouldn't have put that up, huh? In Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17, earlier in the same passage, God has already chastised Satan. He's already chastised the woman. Now he's turning his chastisement on Adam. And he says, Adam, you're going to have weeds that are going to be popping up everywhere now. You're going to have to get down on your knees and you're going to have to toil in the soil. He says, because of your sin, you're going to have to work. You're going to have to go through hardships. Why? Because Adam sinned. In addition to this, the Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 6, verse 23, that the wages of sin is death. When does sin occur then? When does death occur then? When sin enters the life. And when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, death came in. And ever since then, death's been lingering around. And suffering can also result from other sin. It doesn't have to necessarily be your sin in your life. Suffering can result from the sins of others. How many of you have experienced suffering in your life because of the sins of others? I was recently talking with somebody just today who lost their child because of a drunk driver. They suffered because of the sins of somebody else. Well, in the book of 1 Chronicles chapter 21, also the story is told in 2 Samuel 21 as well. And this is a story I've talked about many times, and I think it's a very powerful story. In this story, David is moved with pride to number the fighting men of Israel. His commander, Joab, says, David, don't do it. It's not what God wants you to do. But David ignores his commander. He numbers his fighting men. He starts counting them off. And God comes on the scene and says, David, I'm not happy with you. He says, choose how you want to be punished. And David throws himself on the mercy of God and says, God, you punish me. But God's punishment is not always easy. God took with him that day 70,000 men from David's army. David's sin in numbering his people affected the whole nation. Not just 70,000 men, because they were sons, they were nephews, they were fathers and brothers. David's sin impacted the whole nation. The sins of each other, all of our sins impact other people. So sin and suffering occur because, evil and suffering occur because of sin. Your sin causes suffering and evil in your life. Others' sin causes suffering and evil in your life. The earth itself, the creation itself, suffers because of humans' sin. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 17 and 18, I just now realized I told you the wrong passage earlier and I made the wrong point earlier. Well, that's okay. If you didn't catch it, I won't go back. Genesis chapter 3, verse 17 and 18. God cursed the ground because of Adam's and Eve's sin. I'll tell you what I messed up on if you didn't already catch it. In Genesis chapter 2, God tells Adam and Eve, don't eat of the fruit of the tree in the garden, because if you do, then you will surely die. That was earlier when I said Genesis chapter 2, and I made the wrong point there. Genesis chapter 3, we see God cursing the ground because of the sin of Adam and Eve. Or specifically in this case, this is Adam's punishment, if you will. In Genesis chapter 7, verse 21 through 23, we see that God destroys every living creature, not just man, every living creature from the face of the earth because of man's sin. Notice the passage I have on the screen, Romans chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. It says, for the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God, for the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Notice verse 22. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. As a result of man's sin, creation suffered. Not just humans suffered as a result of man's sin. Creation itself, the earth, its creatures, I believe tornadoes and hurricanes, all these horrible things, came as a result of man's sin. Evil and suffering occur because of sin. I think it is important, though, to remind ourselves at this point, it is not necessarily the sins of each individual as to why they are suffering. You cannot look at a person and say, that person must be a sinful man because they have bad things in their life. In fact, that's what the apostles thought. If you remember the story in John chapter 9. They come upon a blind man, and they say to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents? And what did Jesus say? Neither one sinned, but he's blind so that you can see the glory of God revealed. Sometimes people have suffering and evil in their life, and it's not necessarily a reflection of their own righteousness or unrighteousness, but simply because sin entered the world, suffering and evil occur. It's also important to note that suffering and evil hurts God more so than it hurts you. Isn't that a kind of a strange thought? People, atheists want to say, you know, God, if there was a God, he's all loving and all powerful, then why doesn't he stop this? And we're getting to that. But here's another point I want to make. God being all-loving hurts tremendously when we suffer, when we go through hardships. He suffers right along with us. My sons, two boys, if you don't know my boys, they are kind of rambunctious. And they have had a history of, especially Blade, of earaches. And one thing Blade hates is taking medicine. And unless you go to Albertsons, by the way, medicine is pretty putrid for kids. And we used to take this liquid medicine. I used to have to sit on his arms, put my finger in his mouth, and inject this medicine down his throat because he would not take it otherwise. He would cry, and he would try spitting it out, and I would have to leave my fingers in there until he was swallowed, and it broke my heart every time that I had to do that to him. But you see, I understood something he didn't. If he doesn't take this medicine, he doesn't get better. He is suffering short term, and it's affecting me. But I realize a greater thing has to happen. He has to get better, and this medicine is going to help him in that. Notice this passage from Matthew chapter 23. The Lord is hurting here. And I've told you guys this before, those of you who heard me speak a number of times. I've said this is the scripture that I have the hardest time with in the Bible. At least perhaps one of two, anyways. This passage just tears me up. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you would not? Christ was suffering because they were a sinful people. It hurt him. It took him it right to the bone. He says, I wanted to gather you like a hen gathers her chicks, protect you, comfort you, and you would not have me. You remember the story in John chapter 11 where Lazarus has been killed and his sisters, Mary and Martha, they're hurting. And Jesus comes 4 days late, intentionally, because he knows a greater lesson is going to be taught. So he allows Martha and Mary and many of the people to suffer because he sees a greater good is going to come in a little while. But in that story in John chapter 11 and verse 35, the shortest verse in the Bible, which most of you in here will quote, I'm sure if I asked you, two words. Jesus looks at the pain and suffering that is happening to these people. What does it say? Jesus wept. Jesus and God, they're not separated from our suffering. They very much feel it right along with us. To me, that's actually comforting. It's actually a comforting thought for me to know that God has not abandoned me. He's not a God who's out there and He created earth but has nothing to do with us. He is a God who is right here on the earth with us, going through the hardships with us, struggling with us. Because God allows us to choose, we are free to make choices to whether obey Him or disobey Him. If we're free to disobey Him, then suffering's going to occur, isn't it? Can we separate sin from suffering? Can those things be separated? Let's see. Where do all good things exist? In God. If all good things exist in God, and sin is a separation from God, can you have sin in your life? Can you have sin in the world and not have suffering? Sin and suffering are inseparable. Atheists might come on the scene and say, well, why doesn't God then just make everything okay? Because God expects us to live righteously. There are some things God cannot tolerate, and sin separates us from God. And if we are separated from God, we are no longer a part of the goodness of God. Or at least we have separated ourselves from that goodness. Point number one, then, is this. There is evil and suffering in the world because God allows us to choose. God allows us to choose. Point number two. That's point number three, so don't read that one yet. Point number two. Evil and suffering allows humans to display great virtues. Would you guys all agree that 9/11 was a horrible tragedy? And many people suffered because of that tragedy? I think you guys would all agree with that statement. But would you also agree that out of that, we looked at the New York Fire Department and the New York Police Department and said, what tremendous heroes. They risked their lives for people. And we look at what they did and we say, wow, they were courageous individuals. They were powerful people. Let me read you this. Could there be compassion without suffering? Could there be mercy without a need? Could there be courage without danger? Could there be sacrifice without a great cause? We respect those people who perform this way when things are bad. So therefore, we must admit that good can come out of evil. And if good can come out of evil, could it not be that a good God allows evil and suffering to occur so that a greater good can come out of it? Is that not possible? That God allows these things to happen because He knows something great can come out of it? Point number three. We're at point number three here. Short-term evil and suffering often accomplish long-term good. Short-term evil and suffering often accomplish long-term good. I talked a minute ago about my son needing that medicine and shooting it down his throat, and I hated that. But see, I realized what he didn't. He may have to suffer for a few minutes, but I realized this was for a long-term good. God sometimes, and listen to this carefully, God sometimes uses evil deeds for His purposes. I'm not saying God causes evil deeds to occur, but since they do occur, God sometimes uses those for His purposes. Joseph is a very famous story. In the book of Genesis, we read of a young man named Joseph who was at first an arrogant young man, and he was cocky, and he told his family how things were going to go. You were going to bow down to me. You were going to praise me. You were going to all just think I'm the greatest that there ever was. His brothers hated him because of this. So they made a plan to get rid of him, to kill him. But we all know the plan was changed by Reuben when Reuben feels bad and takes him up out of the pit, and instead of killing him, he sells him. He goes into Egypt, and notice this passage from Genesis chapter 45, beginning in verse 5. "And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you," look at this passage, "so it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt." Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." Sometimes God uses evil deeds or suffering in the life of one person to help other people. Joseph had to go through some hard times. Being in the jail cell was not, I'm sure, a pleasant thing for Joseph. Being in a pit was, I'm sure, not a pleasant thing for Joseph. But he had to go through hardships for the good of others. God allows evil and sufferings to occur because it makes us better Christians. Because it makes us better Christians. Notice this passage from Romans chapter 5. "More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope." Paul says these things happen because they make us better Christians. Does Paul know anything about suffering? Absolutely, he knows all about suffering, doesn't he? And he says these things produce something in us that is good. So God can allow these things to happen because they build better Christians. The psalmist said this in Psalms 119, verse 71, "It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn your statutes." That's hard, isn't it? It's hard to realize that sometimes God allows hardships to occur in our life because he wants us to learn something from it. The psalmist said, "It is good that I was afflicted," because when he was afflicted, he learned the statutes of God. He learned better how to obey God. He learned better how to rely upon God. He learned better the message God was wanting him to get out of this. God often uses suffering to draw people to him. Would you agree that God uses suffering to draw people to him? If I were to ask you guys, what good thing, besides what I already mentioned about, you know, the fire department, the police, what other good thing happened from 9/11? If I were to ask you, I bet you many of you would say the nation, at least temporarily, turned to God. I remember driving down 6th Street here in Grants Pass and up 7th Street and seeing on those billboards, "God bless America." I mean, we don't see that anymore. We didn't see it for years, did we? But when these hardships came, people were wanting to turn to something bigger than themselves. God uses sometimes hardships and sufferings to draw people to him. Notice this passage from 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8. "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself." Let's stop for a second. Doesn't that just sound horrible? Is the Apostle Paul suffering a little bit here? Or is he suffering a lot? Look at that last line one more time. "For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself." You ever been so despaired and so torn up that you wish God would just take your life from you? Well, I think a lot of people in here have had that kind of a thought. "God, I'm hurting so bad. Just take me home." The Apostle Paul said we were despairing of life itself. Look at verse 9. "Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." Isn't that awesome? You see, when we think nothing can be any possibly worse, this is as bad as it can get. When we have nowhere else to go, when there's no way things can get better, and we turn to God and things improve, who are we going to give glory to? Hopefully we recognize why it improved. Hopefully we recognize that things improve when God is on your side. A God who is not all-powerful, again talking about Rabbi Harold Kushner's statement, a God who is not all-powerful and therefore cannot control evil and suffering offers very little comfort. But a God who is all-powerful and who can make good come from evil and suffering offers tremendous comfort. He offers tremendous comfort. Here's another thought. If there were no suffering and evil in this world, would we desire and long to go and be somewhere else? If there were no evil and suffering in this world, would we take God for granted? I think we would. I think we would. This is something I talked about just last Sunday evening. We talked about 1 Peter, and that book is a book of suffering. That is a book that I think if you want to learn about suffering and how to deal with it correctly in a godly way, I think you should read that book. It's a powerful book, and we talked about some of these things just last week. And one of the things I want to end with tonight, we're not quite the end, but we're definitely getting there, is I want you to remember that we need to suffer as Christians. Turn to the book of 2 Corinthians, because I don't have all of this up that I want up. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I want to begin in verse 8. I want to read verse 8 and 9, then we're going to skip down, and then you can read along with me if you'd like, or follow along in your own Bible. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8 and 9. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. The Apostle Paul is saying here, bad things are happening to us all around us. And I love the very first, I love all of what he said, don't get me wrong, but this one, for some reason, I just love more than anything. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Regardless of the things that were happening in the Apostle Paul's life, he says, they're hurting, but I'm not crushed. I am still able to go on. I'm not crushed. The Apostle Paul went through hardships that I don't think any of us in here can imagine. And yet he said, but I'm not crushed. Let's skip down to verse 16. And notice here the Apostle Paul is focusing on something that we need to focus on as Christians. He's focusing on not the physical, not the temporary, but on things that are unseen, things that are immortal. Look at what he says beginning in verse 16. So we do not lose heart. Though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction, and again, the Apostle Paul calls his afflictions slight and momentary. And remember, if you will, just for a moment, what he went through. Beatings, shipwrecks, stoning, left for dead, imprisonment, many others as well. And he says these things are slight and momentary. He says these slight and momentary afflictions are preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. As Christians, we need to focus on those things that are eternal. And I promise you this, and I'm not saying I'm there yet, so please don't get me wrong when I say this, but if we can learn to focus on those unseen things, suffering and evil in this world will seem momentary and slight. And I promise you that if you can get to that point, they will. I absolutely believe that because the Apostle Paul was at that point, and he says they're slight and momentary. Strive to get to the point in your life where you realize that these evil and sufferings that occur in your life are just that, slight and momentary. When you look at the big picture, what is 90 years in the face of eternity? If you were to live 90 years and suffer every day of your life, miserable suffering, and we would look at that and we would say how horrible that is. If you were to suffer for 90 years, excruciating pain every day of your life, but go to heaven to spend eternity, would there be one of us in this room who would say it wasn't worth it? Because those 90 years, in comparison, are transient. And that suffering is slight compared to hell. And we need to recognize that God is in control. Turn over with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And this is another one of those passages. For those of you who have heard me speak a number of times, you know I use this passage all the time. It's one of my absolute favorites in the Bible. And the reason I like this passage so much is it demonstrates Satan's failure and God's victory. See, in spite of Satan's worst attacks, in spite of Satan's evil and suffering that he puts in your life, God can, if you allow him to, take that evil and suffering and make it something wonderful. I believe that. Look at what the Apostle Paul says happened to him in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. So to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being too elated. So Satan intentionally put a hardship in Christ, in the Apostle Paul's life. He put a hardship in the Apostle Paul's life, hoping to break the Apostle Paul, hoping to make him a shell of the man that he was going to be, hoping to take him out of where he was going. See, I think Satan saw greatness in the Apostle Paul, and he said, I got to stop this man. So I'm going to put a thorn in the flesh. I'm going to stop him. I'm going to do everything I can to hinder him. When I was in high school, those people who saw me play football knew I was nothing spectacular. I mean, I played, and I made some good plays, and I made a lot of bonehead plays. I'm going to tell you tonight about a bonehead play I made. When I was a sophomore, I was the starting offensive right guard. And our coach called a play where I'm supposed to, those of you who don't know football, I'm supposed to pull out by the center, and I'm supposed to run down the offensive line. I'm what they call a pulling guard. I'm supposed to hit whoever is coming across that line, any defensive player coming across that line. And it usually was supposed to be an outside linebacker. And so the coach called this play, and I pull, and I'm running, and I see the defensive player, and I hit him. And they called a clip on me, 15-yard penalty. Coach yells at me from the sidelines, Halas, you're an idiot. And I already knew that. No big shock. Halas, you're an idiot. I take that with a grain of salt. He says, so he takes off, you know, he says, do another play. And he calls another play in, and the quarterback says, we're going to go on two. And, I decided I was going to go on one. So in two consecutive plays, I had 20 yards of penalties. Coach is furious with me at this point, calls me out, balls me out for a minute, one play happens, he puts me back in there and says, we're running the play where you're pulling. Don't mess up. So I go back in there, you know what I did? I clipped him. In four plays, I was only in on three of them because he pulled me out for one. In four plays, I had 35 yards of penalties. You see, I was trying to help my team, but what I ended up doing was helping the other team. See, this is how Satan is. Satan thinks he is helping his team, but what he doesn't realize is that God can use his best efforts to help God's team. Satan thought, I'm going to hurt Paul, I'm going to break Paul down, I'm going to put a thorn in the flesh, and it's going to hurt Paul. Let's look at the rest of this story. He says three times, verse 8, three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But verse 9, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. The Apostle Paul learned that he was stronger now. See, Satan meant to bring Paul down, to break Paul up. But God, using this thorn in the flesh, made Paul a better man because of it. That's what I love about that passage. Satan's failure was God's victory. Satan intended for it to be a harmful thing, but God used this evil and suffering, which Satan intended, for a good cause. I want to end with this last, I guess you would call it a poem. And you need to really listen. I'm going to read it twice because I think it's worth reading twice. It is called A Creed for Those Who Have Suffered. And it was written by an unknown Confederate soldier. It's anonymous, by the way. You guys, okay. I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do great things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I may be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for, but everything I had hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among men most richly blessed. Like I said, I'm going to read it twice. I think it's worth reading twice. I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do great things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I may be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I may enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for, but everything I had hoped for. Almost, despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among men most richly blessed. If you're here tonight and you are struggling with anything in your life, if you're struggling with evil and suffering, if you are struggling with things that we can be of assistance with, if there's anything that we can help you with at all tonight, please come as we sing a song that's been selected.